You are listening to episode 375 of the Good New World Order. My name is Klaatu, and in this episode, we'll be looking at a bunch of applications that come installed on your Slackware system by default. If you're not running Slackware, that's okay. They're probably available on your Linux distribution, whatever it may be. Just have to look around for it a little bit, or just find them online. They're open source. You can download and compile them and run them. Okay, so I want to start on we're in the AP package set. We got through MariaDB in the previous episode, so we're doing the M section, like M. And hopefully, I think we might be able to finish the M section today in this episode, if we're very careful. And by we, I mean me. I'm going to try to be relatively quick in coverage, because a lot of these are actually simple applications, but listen to me, I'm wasting time. Let's get started. Oh wait, there's listener email. Luckily, mail starts with M, so we can do this. So, the electronic mail from DeepGeek is a white paper about how BSD, or OpenBSD specifically, is working, or was working, at a couple of years ago now, to secure web servers, to make a web server more secure. And one of the really, really obvious or standout-ish kinds of things that was listed in this paper. I mean, there are several points, like forking OpenSSL, crypto, and LibreSSL, and combining them or using bits and pieces from those two for their own SSL stack or something like that. There was stuff about configuration, implementation, and so on, or implementation and design. But the configuration of the server that they're using, the web server, to run by default in a cheroot really stood out to me, because I think that was probably why DeepGeek sent me the article. It stood out because it really kind of goes to show how valuable this concept of isolating processes really can be. And that's something that they specifically mention in this paper. I mean, one of the mitigation techniques that they use in OpenBSD, which is famously considered pretty secure, is to just put their web server, the thing that is listening for outside communication and putting out a lot of communication into the world, is to put it in essentially a container. I mean, it's not a container. It doesn't use C groups, and it's not the PIDs are in the same namespace and so on. But essentially, it's an isolated tank where you put your web server, and then should any code get into that web server, because the web server is always listening for communication, right? So if you figure out how to insert code into that web server's processing workflow and something bad happens that shouldn't happen, then that code that you've injected into that web server, when it gets out of that process, outside of that web server loop, then the root of the system, as far as that code will know, is a fake root, right? It's not the actual root of your server, of your actual unit, the server, the OS that you're actually running. It's a fake root. It's a cheroot. It's been cherooted such that there's a root with, you know, all of your web server stuff in there, but it's not leading to any other information that's on your system. It's not leading to a point on your system where maybe some bad code would have expected to find some valuable information or a place to poison your system or whatever the code is meant to do. Really, really interesting to see that was such a highlight in this paper. I mean, it's not from ages ago. I think it's 2015 or something. So it's relatively recent, but notable, I think, for that purpose. Like that's the value of isolating processes. And I think as computing continues to evolve, I think we have seen and we will continue to see that model being more and more valuable. I mean, you see everyone moving in that direction. It's just all over the place. It's on your mobile. It might be on your computer already. It may be in your package manager if you're using, for instance, Flatpak. If I can call like Flatpak a package manager, I know it's not really, but I mean that command set pulling from FlatHub and so on, updating from FlatHub. That's, we could call it a package manager of sorts, pulling down SDKs, kits, and so on. So it could even be on your operating system at a lower level, like Silverblue Fedora, where the system is immutable and you're installing all your packages essentially as Flatpaks, and so on. So kind of an important deal, and it kind of underscores how that concept of not exposing the whole layout of your operating system to just any old foreign process is kind of important. I mean, it may be one of those things that we look back in 10 years and just chuckle and think, I can't believe we all thought it was okay to do that in the past. You know, like when we look back at the internet 20 years ago and we think, oh wow, they just had open email relays. How crazy is that? Yeah, it is kind of crazy now, but then it demonstrably was not. And now we're possibly in 10 years, we'll be looking back at us now thinking, wow, we would just run local applications straight on the OS, like without a chroot or without a jail or without a container of any sort, without any kind of namespace isolation. How crazy was that? What were we thinking? Well, we were thinking, you know, for a long time that's all we needed. And I think it is starting to evolve in a different direction. I mean, I'm no expert. I could be wrong. I could be misreading all, you know, I could get this all wrong. And possibly this is just a little weird deviation in the steady flow of computing. I mean, I think you could almost argue that virtual machines was that. Virtual machines were kind of a deviation. I mean, they're basically gone now. They're not really gone, but I mean, as a solution, as the kind of solution that they were headed towards being like the solution, and now they're gone. I mean, they've changed into containers. I think you could probably argue that, well, the theory and the concept is really, really similar. But I'm just saying this idea of, I'll just throw a VM on my machine and live in my VM for a while. That's just not something that people typically do anymore. Maybe that's what's going to happen with containers. I don't know. But I'm feeling like that's not, I feel like this is at least on the right track, just because of the history that we've had now. As we looked just in the previous episode, I think we were talking about DeepGeek's email about the history of containers from like 1979, I think it was, on up. And now we're kind of looking at how that has been utilized in lots of different use cases with really, really great success. So thanks, DeepGeek, wherever you are, for that email. I will include a link to the PDF report in the show notes. Okay, so let's start. I'll go a little bit out of order here just for logic purposes, because two of them are similar. Two of the packages that I want to talk about today are similar. There's mock, and there so that's mock, actually. And there's MPG123. Both of those are media players. Mock is not to be confused with MOOC. It is a different MOOC. And I'm saying MOOC because I don't want it to get confused with mock, which would be a completely different thing, which also should not be confused with mock, which is a completely different thing. Not on Slackware anyway, I don't think. Maybe somewhere, but the mock I know is a building tool for Fedora, sort of a fake root type tool, whereas mock is a version of awk, and mock is one of two things. It's either the package called mock, MOC, or it's a compiler command that ships with the Qt libraries. So, confusingly, MOC, if you're not already confused, MOC, Music on Console, MOC, the package, provides MOCP. That is the command that you'll be issuing if you want to run Music on Console player, MOCP. If you type mock, MOC, at your terminal right now, you may not have anything. Like if you don't have any of the kubelibs installed for whatever reason, then you won't find an MOC. It'll just error out. But if you do have those installed, then you'll find that MOC points to something like usr/lib/64/qt/bin/MOC. So if we do an MOC dash dash help, we get a list of things about how to compile some code and where the includes are and things like that. Not what we're doing right now. Instead, if we do man MOCP, that takes us to the man page for Music on Console, which is a console audio player. And MOC is a console audio player a simple in-person interface. So what that means is that this isn't going to be like Mad Play. Mad Play. This is meant to be like a GUI application, except in your terminal. Sometimes people call that a TUI, TUI, which in New Zealand, by the way, is a very famous and popular bird with absolutely beautiful, beautiful song. So MOCP will take over your terminal when you type in MOCP, takes over your terminal and becomes a little player with controls and stuff like that, a display, a directory listing, and so on. It is run from a terminal. It takes over that terminal. So if you'll probably want to use it in a terminal that has tabs or that you're running in Tmux or Screen or something like that, because otherwise you'll start the thing and you'll be out of business. That's all your terminal is doing. Well, that's not entirely true. As it turns out, you do have a dash dash server option to run the MOC server, and that way you can, in theory, talk to the player from a different location. So there is that option. Unfortunately, the man page doesn't tell me that, as far as I can tell, how then to interact with it. So it kind of identifies that there is a server mode, and that I would assume that implies that there's a client mode, and there is a slight mention of a client because it tells me that there's a mockp underscore client underscore log file that you can define, but it doesn't tell me how, once I've started the server, how do I communicate with it. Well, we can try it anyway. We can go to I'll go to a drive that I have full of music, and this will be a little bit easier for me because I actually have mock one of the MOCP, one of the features of that is that it plays OGG, FLAC, WAV, MP3, and even other formats. So, whereas MadPlay, of course, was limited to MPEG-3, which was only useful to a certain degree for me, this is a lot more useful because it does handle a lot more file formats. So I'm just typing in M oh, I'm typing MOC instead of MOCP. That's gonna kill me. So MOCP, by default, it sort of loads its previous locations wherever you left off, unless you set the directory with the dash dash music dash dir, or just dash m for short, so that it knows kind of where to start out. So I'm going to do music dash dir and space dot because I just changed directories into a folder full of OGG files. So on the left side of the screen, so my screen turns blue, the terminal screen, the background becomes blue, white text, very DOS mode. People who are into that will love it probably. I imagine, I don't actually know, never really seen actual DOS in motion. I've seen free DOS, but I understand that the blue on the white on blue is kind of, yeah, that's, I think that's the DOS mode or the DOS look for a lot of people. Left side is the current directory where I am in, PWD, left side. Right side is a playlist which I can build with songs that are on the left side if I wanted to. The way to do that is to click the, or not click, press the A button. So if I go over to this folder, Did You Just Hex Me? It's a metal band, Creative Commons metal band, and go to the track 1, A, then I'll go down to track, I don't know, 3A, and that gets added to the right side of the screen. Go down to the track 7, 9, and then finally 13. So now I've just added 5 tracks to the left side. Now I can navigate my file system once I'm in MOCP by just arrow keying, and of course at the very, very tippy top of the directory on the in the left side, that's my PWD, there are 2 dots. So I go back, and sure enough, I'm in my Creative Commons metal directory. So I'll go down to Mintat. It's a really good band, actually. And I'll add track 3. I think that's the really long one. And track 1. It is kind of weird how, and those are MP3s. So that's kind of cool that I found an MP3 band without trying. But I can now build a playlist that contains both OGG and OGG and MP3 files in one playlist in the same player. And I realize for a lot of people that's not a big deal. I'm just comparing it to Mad Play, for instance, which would only play MP3s. So, and I don't mean to disparage Mad Play for only, I've already talked about that last time, but it is nice to have multi-format support, certainly. Okay, so a couple of different commands that one would want to know, I guess. The basic commands are space to play or pause, or is it space or maybe return, actually, enter, whatever. Enter, I actually use enter normally, so let's try space. Yeah, okay, cool. So here's what happens. So I guess I'll, instead of trying to do this logically, I'll do it through a workflow. So if I'm over in the left-hand column, if I'm in my file system, to get over to my playlist, I can just hit tab, and then you can do the same thing, arrow around in your playlist and select whatever song you want. Now, if you just want to start playing from the top, you go to the first track and hit enter on your keyboard, and then starts playing from that track. Hit space, it pauses. Now, once you're in pause mode, you can hit space again to unpause, and that would be the normal, I think, workflow, right? You want to pause your music, you pause it, and you play it, and that's the space bar, pause play. But if you want to change track and start playing that track, you go to whatever track you want to play, and you press return, or enter, whatever it's called on your keyboard. So that's the sort of the basic workflow for adding, building your playlist and starting it to play and pausing it and so on. Other sort of, I guess, obvious things would be, for instance, clear the playlist. That would be Shift C. You can shuffle with Shift S. You can force something to repeat with Shift R. Play the next file in. And as you can guess, previous file would be, nope, not P for previous, it would be B for back. That threw me off a lot before I discovered the next tip, which I'll give to you in a moment. But P is to pause as well. I don't know why they do that, but in B, of course, you may actually kind of recognize from Emacs. It's a little bit Emacsy, not entirely, but it's a bit Emacsy. So a really good useful tip, I guess, is that, what is it? Is it just, I think it's just question mark. Yeah, it's one of those things where you have to do it in order to remember it. So it's just question mark, shift question mark to get your help menu. So you'll be using that a lot when you're learning MOC. You'll be referencing your help screen a lot. And to get out of your help screen, it's Q. That won't quit MOC, it just quits. Or rather, MOCP. It just quits the help screen, gets you back into MOC's interface, and then you can do whatever you want to do. Honestly, like 80%, 90% of what you're going to be doing in this application is exactly what I've just described, which is just looking around your file system, building a playlist, and going about your business that way. There's probably a way to save your playlist. I have not done that. I'll try it in a moment. I very rarely save playlists anyway, and in fact, I very rarely build playlists because I think I've said in previous episodes, back when I had actual physical media of music, I ripped everything as a full album. I didn't rip it as separate tracks. So I very rarely have to build a playlist. I simply point it at an album file and have the whole album play. That's just the way I enjoy my music. But with stuff that I download from Bandcamp or whatever, it might be a little bit different. They have entire track listings that I have to deal with. Although it's not completely beyond me to just chain all of those together into one file, losslessly, just combine them. I have definitely done that before. So most of your activities are going to be arrow, 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 and then A to add a file to your playlist, and then just going over to your playlist with tab. And hitting return to start your playlist, and then you just kind of forget about it. At least that's how I manage it personally. If you are running in a GUI, you'll probably just manage your music, or rather your volume, with your whatever GUI interface you've got for your volume. Otherwise, you can increase and decrease the volume with either the greater than or less than symbol. That does it by just minute increases, or you can do 5% increases with a comma and a dot. So that's you can scan through a music file with arrow keys. So that's a nice feature. You can kind of fast forward, rewind, that sort of thing. There's also a different layout option, sort of. So it's a little bit like tmux or scream, I guess, in a way, or like Emacs, if you configure it right. Point being, so you have two columns naturally. You've got your file system on the left, your playlist on the right. I do find that I quite like that layout myself. But if you've got really long file names, or maybe you're just done scanning through your file system, you just don't need that view up, you can hit L for a layout, and that expands your current column to take up the entire terminal. So for instance, if I'm in my PWD, hit L. Now all I see is my file system. Hit L again, it splits it back up. I can tab over my playlist and hit L. Now all I see is my playlist, or get out of that with L again. So that's the basic interactions with MOC. It's really simple, very intuitive. You get it pretty quickly, and I gotta admit, it's pretty nice. It is nice enough that I was able to use that as my music player for the past week. Just whenever, in the mornings when I'm doing my work, that's what I've been bringing up instead of Amarok, which has been my go-to, which incidentally is exactly how I've been, like, that's kind of how I configure Amarok, is this exact layout. The file system on the left, the playlist on the right, I hit play, and then I ignore it for, the next 45 minutes to an hour or whatever, and that's how I really, really quite prefer it. So I'm gonna save this playlist right now. I'm going to save it to, I guess I'll just put it in my home directory and I'll call it test. I don't know what kind of file it is going to create. That's the thing that I'm not too sure about. So we'll go here, we'll do a less on test m3u. Cool, so it is an m3u. So that's pretty nice. I don't actually care about the formats of playlists, but m3u does typically strike me as a pretty simple format to parse. So I kind of like that, and I do know that it's a fairly universal format. You'll find that being recognized by lots of different devices. So I think that's probably a pretty great choice. And now, believe it or not, I'm gonna discover how to use the server component of MOCP, because I have a theory now, and I'll bet I'm right. So first of all, in the man page, it tells you that you can run MOCP as a server, which I've already done. I did that when I was talking about it, so it's actually already running. And if I try it again, it tells me fatal error, server is already running. So now I don't hear music right now, so I'm going to do MOCP dash dash play, and now I hear music. MOCP dash dash next, and it just changed tracks. I wonder if I can pause it. I can pause it, yeah. So that's really easy. Oh my gosh, that's so simple. That's really cool. So there you go. You can control your music player with the same, or very intuitive commands, with the same, the exact same command that you used to start it. I like that a lot. I assumed there was going to be an MOCP server, and then you'd have to get a separate client to control the thing. But the client is also the server, and that's really nice. Another thing to keep in mind, or to be aware of rather, is that you can also control your sound driver, which may or may not, you might not need to really mess around with that. I don't need to, because I use Pulse, and Pulse is pretty amazing for routing sound. But you can do it yourself if you want. You can do MOCP dash dash sound dash driver, or just dash capital R if you're lazy, and then define where you want it to go. You can send it to ALSA. You can send it to Jack. You can send it to SNDIO or OSS or null. I don't know exactly why you would want null, but you could do that. And you'll notice that Pulse is missing from that. So luckily, Pulse has that ALSA component to it, the ALSA plugin, that it can kind of grab things from ALSA. It does. It doesn't. It works. It's a little bit. It's too bad that it doesn't have a direct input into Pulse, into the Pulse system. But that's fine. I mean, it works perfectly, with the rest of my system. It's not that big of a deal, but it is something that is missing from that. That's it. That's MOCP, really. That's all you need to know about it. It is such a beautiful little application. Really, really impressive. If you have not tried it, absolutely try it. Use the thing. It's great. Let's go get coffee. Thank you. We've got coffee now. Now things are looking good. Things are looking better, even. They weren't looking bad before, but boy, are they looking good now. Okay, so let's talk about this other player that we have to talk about, which is called MPG123. So I don't know if there is a. This is one of those really intuitive ones. Yeah, there is a man page too. So MPG123 plays audio embed 1 to 2.5 layers 1, 2, and 3. This is basically Mad Play. I mean, honestly, except it's not Mad Play. It's MPG123. It's a console music player. It is not a fancy interface like MOCP. It's simple. It reads a file and plays it to your speakers. That's all it does. So you type in MPG123 and you point it at a file, and it plays that file. Simple as that. You can use it as a converter, which is nice. MPG123-W, and then whatever the file name you want to save it out as. That's really quite nice. On Slackware, where SOX, S-O-X, is not compiled by default with lame built in, this is a really useful workaround for that missing component of SOX, because SOX is such a great application, but it couldn't at the time of Slackware 14.2, couldn't be compiled with MPEG 3 support. So that is blatantly missing from it. When you run into that problem, use this. I wish I'd known that a long time ago. So you can do weird things too, -2 to downsample it in half, presumably. I'm assuming they're assuming that it's a 44.1, so you can do -2 to cut it down to 22 kilohertz. You can do -4 to cut it down to 11 kilohertz. Not really sure why you'd want to, but I guess you can. Maybe at a point in time that was important for something. I'm not really sure why. -C, you can enable control keys so you can kind of maneuver around your song as it plays. You can set the sample rate. You can select the output module or the audio device. And that's about it, I guess. I mean, it's a useful little command, I imagine. Like I said, when I was talking about Mad Play, I just don't have that many MP3s that I listen to on a very regular basis. It's really, I tend to almost accidentally favor the AUG files, and I guess that's just because the files that I have as AUG or FLAC are the ones that I cared about very early on and ripped myself, or I downloaded from Bandcamp and specifically took as something that I free codec, like FLAC, generally speaking. But FLAC, they can be big files, so sometimes I just get on. Either way, I think I just naturally gravitate towards those for things that I kind of seek for long-term ownership. Gapless playback. In MPEG 3s, there was this thing at some point where, I guess, because of the beauty of, I guess, of MP3s, they couldn't apparently play music tracks smoothly as if though there was no gap between the tracks. And I guess that was a big enough problem at one point that you had to really work hard to make it gapless. And so you can use the option dash dash gapless or dash dash no dash gapless to either enable or disable the gapless, accounting for that gap or the lack of a gap. Really strange. I mean, my gosh, MP3, I think I said this last time, whatever it brought to the world, you know, with this whole, hey, we can digitally encode music, isn't that exciting? Like, whatever role it had in that change of mindset, I gotta say, it was almost completely nullified by just the quality of the thing. It's just so embarrassing to look at. And this is, I mean, honestly, this is, I that must be why I just can't. You know, MP3, I mean, I know, it's not valid apparently anymore, like the licensing and stuff. It's apparently functionally abandonware at this point. You know, it's functionally public domain, I guess. I don't know. I can't release in MP3. It's just not, it's not a serious codec. Okay, so enough about that. That's MPG123, and I don't have a whole lot to say about it that's nice, because it's just something, it's not something that I use myself. But I'm imagining that Michael Hipp and the other people who worked on MPG123 are really, really smart people and probably were on the cutting edge when they came out with that application. So I don't mean to disparage the application, I mean to disparage the codec. So those are the music players for this episode. Let's talk about Most. Some of you may remember years ago now, like probably 3 or 4 or 6 years ago, who knows, I decided to, in earnest, try to find a replacement for less. And it wasn't necessarily that I didn't like less, I just thought that there seemed, surely there must be something better than less. I tried more, did not find that better. You know, and everyone says, well, less is an improvement on more. More, less is better than more. Or what is it? Less is more than more. Whatever that phrase is. And it is. It's just, it is. But I didn't want to take it for granted. I thought, well, people say less is better, but I need to know. I need to make an educated decision about this. And I did make an educated decision because more, I do not find it superior in any way. So there's this other thing called most. And it turns out that it is what we call a pager, which is, of course, what less and more also are. That's what those are. Most is a pager. And it was okay. So we could do, for instance, pager, all in caps, pager, PAGER, equals most. And then let's do a man most. So now we're looking at the man page of most in most. It's pretty fancy. That, by the way, if you don't know, that's setting an environment variable dynamically. So you can, I'm going to press Q to exit. You can sort of override your environment variable by simply typing in your environment variable before you issue your command. So in this case, I'm pager, let's do more man most. Now we're looking at most in the more pager, and it's very basic. So basic, in fact, that things like arrow keys don't work. Q out of that, never get back into that. Pager, most, man, most. Now we're in most. Things I'm really liking right now. I like the color. The most brings color to the man pages, and that's really, really attractive. Is that something I could have elsewhere? Maybe I am not configuring something in an optimal way. And sometimes, the default is really the thing. I mean, we kind of say that about a lot of distributions, Linux distributions. Like, a lot of times the selling point is how little you have to do to make it feel more like the thing that you want. Those default settings are huge. It's just so nice. Something you don't have to learn about, something you never have to think about. It's just done for you. So most, having nice, pretty colors throughout the man page, it's pretty useful, actually. I mean, here I'm scanning through the man page and I'm seeing in red, important options, dash K, dash V. And these are just in paragraphs. I mean, I know if I scroll down with the arrow keys, which do work, I know if I scroll down or Control N and Control P for previous and next line, that works as well. Or Enter, that also scrolls down. So anyway, what I'm trying to say is I can scroll down to see the options, and then that lists every single option. But I'm saying when you're staring at a wall of paragraphs, still kind of explaining things, it's just kind of nice for those things to kind of pop, because maybe you want to find just the part about a certain option. Well, there you go. You see it now. The dash W option may be used to override this feature. Got it. So yeah, it's kind of nice. I'm really loving that the bottom of the screen in most is telling me the source of what I'm looking at. Tells me that it's from standard in, which is true because I typed this into most, or I loaded it into most, really. It shows me the line number that I'm on, the cursor that my, or the column that my cursor is located at, the percentage of the document that I have completed reading. So if I keep scrolling down by a page down or a page up even, I get things like 71%, 54%, 37%. I'm going backwards. Yes, that's really, really nice. It also tells me at the bottom of the screen, press Q to quit, H for help, space to scroll. And sure enough, if I press space, it takes me screen by screen, so I can look at things that way as well. Now, there are lots more very cool options for most. And for the life of me, the more I've been using most for the past week, the less I understand why on Earth, I didn't switch to most. I for the life of me, I'm gonna have to go back. I've been meaning to, and I haven't. I need to go back and listen to the episode where I talk about most, because it's just such an improvement. It really, really is nice. And I'm kind of wondering if it was just if there was something that didn't work for most that I used at the time that I didn't, that was unexpected. Like some use case that I had that maybe was vital to me at that time that now probably wouldn't matter. So that's not out of the question. But the nice thing about most, one of the many nice things, is that you can do really cool window splitting controls. You can load files into most as you're just hanging out in most. So you can load a different file if you get tired of looking at the one you're in, and so on. So yeah, this is very like really it's kind of it's refreshingly Emacs-like in some ways. For instance, if I want to split a window, I can do Control X and then the number 2, and then that splits, it gives me a horizontal split, and then I can change which buffer or which pane I am in, which window pane I'm in, with Control X O. And that's straight out of Emacs. That is exactly the same thing. And then I can load a different file, Control X F, and I can load a different, I'll load that playlist. Oh no, I won't apparently. That's weird. It doesn't have tabbed completion. That's kind of interesting. There it goes. I didn't seem to understand the tilde as a shortcut for my home directory. Not sure why. Possibly because we're piping everything in from standard in. It might not. Maybe it didn't quite realize or understand how to do that to do certain things that I would have expected. Either way, so now I've got two window panes in my terminal, and I can switch between them, Control XO, and scroll independently of the two. So it's very nice little flexible system there. If I want to get rid of one, again, just like an Emacs, Control X0 gets rid of that. If you can't, for some reason, remember Control X2 to split, you can do Control W to split, which I'm assuming they do, so that when the people who associate the word window, Control W too, maybe that would be why. I'm not really sure. You can also do things like T for top, B for bottom, just once you're in the file. That's a little bit weird to me too, because in Emacs you would press the, well, I do it with Escape, Shift, whatever the S key is here on a, it's the W key on a QWERTY. I mean, yeah, it's W on QWERTY, but it's actually it's a less than symbol on Dvorak, and I'm blanking on what's under. Oh, I can just look. Comma. Okay, so Shift comma is how I do it on Emacs to go to the top. Shift dot to go, or Escape Shift dot to go to the bottom. That's just how I do it. I know there are lots of different ways to do that. And then, like in Vim, it's, and I think less too, right? It's G for top and GG for bottom, or vice versa, something like that. Capital G for one. I don't know. If I do it, I can remember it. That won't get you anywhere with this. You have T for top, B for bottom. It's intuitive, or rather, yeah, once you know it's memorable. It just might take you a while to remember it. And then you can go to a certain line as well with just capital G, or probably just G, really. I don't know. I don't go to lines all that often. Yeah, just G. Go to line 122. It doesn't exist. No, it does exist. Okay. Or percentage. You can go to a certain percentage of the document, which is kind of cool. And that's just the percent sign, and then it prompts you at the bottom, go to a percent. 10. There, now we're up 10% down from the top. So that's kind of cool. Q to quit. So, in short, most is a really nice pager. I strongly recommend it. I don't know why I haven't been using it all this time. I have no idea why I would have ever thought that less was the way to go. I'm switching to most officially from now until I realize, until I understand why I didn't switch to most permanently. It could have just been that I had been using most and then I just forgot to reinstate it as my default on a new system. No, that doesn't make sense because it would have been set in my bash rc file, I would have assumed. Either way, most really, really nice. Definitely switching to it. And that leads us nicely, sort of, to the final application in the M section of the AP package set, and that is MC. I don't have MC installed because I don't actually like MC. So I'm going to do slack pkg install MC. Going to install it for this session, for this recording, and then I'm going to uninstall it when I'm finished. Unless, of course, this session surprisingly converts me to MC. But MC, very, very appropriately, is a lot like MOCP, actually. Like it's a dead ringer for it, which when I first launched MOCP kind of made me feel suspicious. I kind of thought, I'm not sure if I'm gonna like this MOCP thing because it looks a lot like that MC thing. And I know a lot of people love MC, so if you don't know what MC is, it is Midnight Commander. I mean, it's not Midnight Commander, but it is Midnight Commander. That's calls itself MC, a visual shell for Unix-like systems. And it's the GNU Midnight Commander. It's a directory browser file manager for Unix-like operating systems. If you don't know what Midnight Commander is or was, and I could be getting the name wrong, possibly Midnight Commander is not the sort of the old branded name, but there was this thing, and I want to say it was by Norton. I think it was by Norton, and this was a long time ago, like probably the 80s. Midnight Commander, is that right? I don't know. No, it says that this is just the thing. It's just Midnight Commander. That's the GNU implementation of that is Midnight Commander. Oh, I see it. I see it. People are probably shouting at me now for several seconds. I apologize, dear listener, if you were shouting at me. It was called Norton Commander. That is what this the original sort of idea behind this, as I understand it, was called Norton Commander, and I think it was probably something for I imagine for DOS maybe. I mean, it looks like it's DOS to me. I don't know. And people really fell in love with it. Like, there are a lot of fans of Norton or this model, this Commander model of navigating a file system. I have tried it in earnest, and I cannot get it. It's just not quite. It isn't quite what I need in a file manager. That said, it's not bad. It's just not what I'm looking for personally. If it is something that you end up enjoying, then by all means, knock yourself out because it's a slick application. It's just not my workflow. But hey, maybe it'll be yours, or maybe you were a fan of Norton Commander and would love to get back into that model and just didn't know where to look. Well, Midnight Commander is the thing that you're looking for. So if you, I think, honestly, I think one of the things that really gets me about it is that Q doesn't quit it. I think that's probably one of the main things, to be honest. It's F10 to quit, and I don't use the F keys ever. Not just because I never got into that habit. Okay, so to get into Midnight Commander, I'm going to make my term a little bit wider here. To get into Midnight Commander, you just type in MC. That's Midnight Commander, MC. And it takes you to wherever you are in your file system at that moment. MC. So I'm in my home directory, and it gives you, again, a two-panel setup. So you have, on the left, you have currently your current working directory. And then on the right, you have, unless you've configured this differently, you have your current working directory. Now, that doesn't have to be the case. And I think this is one of the things that kind of confuses me in a weird way. That these are basically two windows. And for whatever reason, by default, you have two windows always open. I don't know why that would be. In my mind, when I bring up a file manager like Dolphin and KDE, I have one window, and if I want another one, then I bring up another Dolphin window. Now I have two windows. And I could, if I want to drag from one to the other, I can do that. And then I close that other window, and now I only have one window again. That's how I think about it. Now, interestingly, if you're at a terminal, I guess you have one window. If we're thinking of file managing activities, you have one current working directory, and then you never really have a second working directory. You can send a file to another directory, but and so then I guess dynamically you have a second window open. That's your target there. You send it, and then it's gone. You don't have to think about it again. So that idea of a persistent second window, I think, might be confusing to me, or unsettling to me anyway. But that's what you have. So to get to the other side, you hit tab just like in MOCP. And then you can go to some other place, which again feels weird because now your two windows are out of sync. It's even worse, right? So I'll just go into, I don't know, let me get down to my demo directory here. And to get straight to a place quickly, because obviously if you're in a file system with lots of files, that would take you forever to scroll down all the way to demo or to, I don't know, the Z directory. You can do it at Control S, and it brings up a little filter bar, as it were, or a search bar, I guess, and type in whatever you want and hit return. And it takes your selection straight down to whatever you've searched for. It's quite useful. So I'll go into the demo directory. Now I've got a bunch of files there. And that's where we'll leave that, I guess. Again, this setup doesn't make any sense to me because I don't understand what I'm supposed to do once you get to a place. Like, what are you meant to do once you're there? And do you have to be there in order to do your operations? I'm not really sure. So anyway, I'm gonna scroll through my folder here, and I'm just gonna grab a random file. Here's one, pixel.png, nice tiny little file here, and we'll copy that over to my demo directory. So there are two menus in Midnight Commander. One is the top menu, which has selections such as left, file, command, options, right, and then there's the bottom menu, which gives you F key shortcuts. So there's F1 for help, F2 for menu, F3 for view. Actually, F3 for view sounds really good. Oh, I didn't like that. Oh, it wanted to view the file. I thought it was like a layout or something like that. That's what I thought that was. No, that's not what I wanted. Okay, that's fine. Oh well, nice try. So we will continue on. F4 for edit, F5 to copy. So I've got my pixel.png selected, F5 to copy, and it brings up a little dialog box in the middle of the screen, and it says copy the file pixel.png using shell parameters 2, and then it by default fills in the location of the second panel over on the right, which is exactly what I wanted. So yes, that makes sense. And then I can just kind of use tab to get down there to the OK, to the background, or the cancel. Or once I'm in that selection area. Actually, oh, even in the fields. I didn't realize I could do this in the fields. Right and left arrows. No, yeah, you can't. If you're in a text field, you can arrow through the text, but then you're kind of trapped in that text field, so you have to hit tab to get back out. But then you can use arrows again. It's a little bit weird to talk through, but once you get the feel for it makes sense. So I just press OK. It's a pretty quick operation, and that copies the thing over to the demo directory, and it refreshes itself immediately. I don't have to do anything to refresh the view. It pops it over there. You see it in both locations now, and that was a full interaction with Midnight Commander. And you can see why I just don't like this is not an improvement over a terminal, really, right? I mean, I could have done that with one all in one go, very, very quickly, a lot quicker than I just did it in Midnight Commander. I wouldn't have had to tolerate a pop-up window. I wouldn't have had to arrow down or tab through a bunch of selections to get to the OK and so on. So for people who are very used to terminal navigation, and even I'm going to argue, even if you're familiar with graphical window navigation, I don't feel like this is a good substitute for either. I feel like it's this weird kind of middle area. Or not even a middle, it's just like an adjacent method, philosophy of managing files. And here's where I'm going to praise it, because again, while it is not the way that I choose to, or I just can't seem to get used to managing files with this myself, I recognize that it is amazing. It's an amazing alternative to both the other two things, like the terminal and a GUI and window-based environment, like a graphical desktop. This is an amazing alternative. If you don't want, for whatever reason, to work with terminal commands, if that's not what your interest is, but you also aren't at a computer that has a graphical environment, or you're choosing to use a computer without a graphical environment, I don't know why you would do that if you don't also like a terminal. But let's just say that's the situation for whatever reason. And there have been situations where this has been indispensable to me, because back when I was very, very first getting into Unix, I used something, so I don't think it was Midnight Commander, although I could be wrong. It may have been Midnight Commander and I just didn't quite understand it. But it was, no, you know what? It might have been Dur-Ed in Emacs. Would that have been possible? No, that would have been later. That would have happened later. Either way, point is, this was great. This was great for me because I wasn't as good at the terminal yet to where I could just rattle off commands and file path locations. And I think a lot of us, if we've been using Linux for a long time, we forget how complex a file path is. I think I've said that before. Like, to us, the idea of a file being located in home, which home is like a dollar sign home, so we're automatically abstracting that to, well, okay, what we really mean is slash home slash car 2. Well, what we really mean is slash home slash dollar sign username, but or dollar sign user, but that's not, we all know what a variable is, right? Well, no, of course, not everyone does. So we're abstracting a bunch of information just by virtue of the fact that we say, well, assume your home directory. Okay, so assuming that people know what that means, then the idea that something is located in home/demo, that just doesn't calculate with some people. It just doesn't make sense. Like, what do you mean a file is in home, in my home directory? Where's my home directory? How do I get there from my desktop? I don't see a folder called home. Well, that's because when you're in your desktop and you open up your file manager, it probably takes you to your home. You're in your home. So forget what I said about home. Just go to your demo directory. It's just we take these things for granted, and then explaining that and saying, well, that's what you have to type, so now what do? You type /home/username/demo/the file that we're actually looking for, and now what do you do with it? And but if you're in demo, then you can just type the file name. It is complex for people. So having this graphical view, well, it's text-based, but visual, very visual kind of spatial representation of your file system, I think is a huge, huge deal for people who don't want to do it some other way. And I think it's vitally important that this exists, and I just love that it exists because I've heard from listeners, some of you may have been the people who have emailed me in the past saying, I love Midnight Commander. Like, you should check it out. It's a great application. You'll absolutely love it. Well, turns out I don't love it, but that doesn't mean I don't respect it, because I do. I respect it a lot. I think it's a fantastic application, and I will never use it again after today. So I'm going to hit F2 for the menu, and that brings up another pop-up menu. I have to be honest with you. The pop-up menu, just the pop-ups in this directory somehow are, they make me very uncomfortable. I do not like the pop-up menu convention. I don't find it useful. It's just really strange that I feel that way. But anyway, you can bring up a pop-up menu for a bunch of contextual options. So for instance, and again, like, all of this is great. Like, as much as I complain about this thing, it's fantastic, and it's almost difficult. It's difficult to convey how good this application is in many ways, for as much as I also dislike it. But for instance, let's say I go to a directory. Here's my temp directory, TMP. If I'm hitting F2 for my menu, then I go to, go down here to compress the current subdirectory as a /tar/gz, or as a /tar/vz2, or as a /tar.7z, or as a /tar.xz. All of those options right here in a menu form. You do not have to remember how to tar a file. You don't have to ever think about that. It's right here in this contextual menu. It's amazing, amazing. You want to copy it to a remote host? That's in this menu as well. It's just so exciting as an interface. So I mentioned earlier that there were two menus in Midnight Commander, and indeed there are. There's the one at the bottom that's kind of telling you, I guess, is it fair to call that a menu? I mean, it's a listing of commands of the main control panel. There's a menu bar up at the top, and strangely, you do not access that with the F2 key. The F2 key is a contextual menu that you bring up. Okay, it calls itself a user menu. You can build a better user menu. It's apparently a relatively easy process, easy configuration file to create, apparently. I've never tried it, but that's the sort of the user menu. There is the there's the like a system menu, or what they call a menu. And a menu bar, which they also apparently call pull down, like a pull down menu. That makes sense. It's just weird that we have so many different names for it. So to me, it's a menu, or I guess a menu bar. To them, in their help system, it is a menu bar, but in their selection description at the bottom of the screen, it is simply called pull DN. Anyway, it's the F9 key. You hit F9 key, the F9 key, and you don't really necessarily see that you're in the menu bar right away. You kind of have to look for it, because nothing actually appears. It just kind of it makes you it makes your it that it just makes the menu bar the active place. Once you're there, then you can press the down arrow to then view a nice little, a drop-down menu, just like you would expect from an application menu bar. Now, it depends on which side of your screen you're in, on the left or the right, as to which side of this menu bar you start on. So, for instance, over on the left, if I hit Tab and I'm over on my active panel is the left, then I do F9, and the word left up at the top becomes highlighted. Hit the down arrow, and you get all the options for the left panel. You can arrow over to the right panel, arrow down, hit options for the right panel. So in some cases, so there's two different views of your panels. There's the default is file view, where you're seeing just a list of your file system. F9 again, I'm going to go to the tree view. Now this changes things up a bit, and it makes whatever your active panel is, it turns that into a, or rather, I'm sorry, whichever panel you have highlighted in the menu, the left or the right, it makes that one a traditional tree, the file system in the tree view, where you kind of see the whole system from the root directory, and then you've got the little a line sort of demonstrating each different level of directory and subdirectory and so on. Now that kind of becomes, I mean, it's still a place that you can control from, but that's kind of your that remains forever your big global view of your system. And then when you go into a directory over on your tree view, that is itself reflected in your other panel as a normal file list view. So you kind of get the idea. It's kind of once you get sort of a feel for the general setup, you kind of start to explore and you get a feel for where things are and what they control. For instance, the file menu has things like view file, giving a filtered view, edit copy, chmod, link, symlink, relative symlink, that's nice, edit the symlink, chown, advanced chown, rename or move, make directory, delete, quick cd, so to quickly get somewhere. I don't really use that. I don't really use Midnight Commander, but I find that when trying to get somewhere, a Control S gets me to where I want to go relatively quickly. But if you do a CD, the quick CD, then you can type in the exact path that you want to get to, and it takes you there. So no matter where you are in your file system, you can just jump right there, like the CD command. Why that would be the avenue that you would take, again, I don't quite understand, but I imagine for people who generally like this, maybe that's just a nice shortcut. And there is a shortcut for it. You don't actually have to go through the menu. You can go Alt C for the quick CD. So that's kind of handy, probably. And then finally, there's an options menu, which gives you, oh, and a command menu, which gives you help with like swapping panels or switching a certain panel on or off or comparing directories. Looking at your command history, looking at background jobs, getting a list of active screens, and then an options menu for all your configuration and layout and appearance options. So you don't have to stare at a blue screen all day. You can change your theme and so on. So that's Midnight Commander. It's a big application. There's a lot to it. I'm gonna hit F10 and I'm gonna do a remove PKG. NC, and that removes it from my system. It's a big system. It is. It's a complex application, meaning it can do a lot. You can do a lot with it. And if that's something that appeals to you, by all means, check it out. GNU Midnight Commander. It will bring you back to your old DOS days, I guess. And if not, then it will just be a different way for you to navigate your file system, to move files around, to compare directories, and so on. So once again, not my cup of tea, but definitely something that I know a lot of people love, and they're really good at it, and they love it, and they're going to use it, and I applaud them. Personally, if I'm going to use that kind of system, like that in that within that neighborhood, it's Dur-Ed in Emacs all the way, just because that's what I learned. I just didn't know what to do with Midnight Commander the couple of times I checked it out. Couldn't get into the flow of Midnight Commander. But Dur-Ed, because it was easy and it was, well, it was, I say it's easy. It's easy because I was in Emacs anyway, and I thought, oh, that's a cool trick. Let me try that. And then it just kind of, it stuck around. It's just something that kind of was always there. and I didn't have to leave Emacs that way. It was just quite nice. So I feel, and it I think it has the right mix of familiar command mode. You just type Emacs and then you tell it dir head dash whatever you want to do, or if you've assigned a keyboard shortcut to it, you can just issue that for your, to get the thing done. It just had the right mix of sort of being a visual representation that's just interactive enough, but also just command driven enough to kind of get me by. And to be fair, I don't really use dir head that much. It's just something that I do use on occasion when it's convenient. Midnight Commander is exactly what a lot of people are looking for when they want that hybrid experience of, yeah, I need something a little bit more visual than random commands that I may or may not think to type into a terminal, but I don't want to go all the way with a window, sort of graphical, window-y kind of desktop. So I imagine it's a huge deal for those people. It's probably also a huge deal for people who are doing certain commands that they know really well on in a terminal, but they're not so familiar with the nuts and bolts of file paths and CDing around and moving and copying and all that other stuff. So Midnight Commander probably is quite nice for that. Check it out if it's something that appeals to you. That's all of the M's in the AP package set. So we're done. I mean, we're done the M series in the AP package set. We're not done by any means. There's lots more to go. So tune in next time. We'll talk about Nano, Normalize, and others. Talk to you later. Cast. This has been Klaatu. You can reach me on IRC. I'm on the Freenode network usually in channels such as Augcast Planet, Slacker Media, Slackware, a couple of others. My nick on IRC is not Klaatu. You can also reach me lately on Mastodon. My username there is at Klaatu at mastodon.xyz. Of course, you can email me at klaatu at member.fsf.org. That's klaatu at member.fsf as in Free Software Foundation.org. And of course, you can visit my various websites, GNUWorldOrder.info and SlackerMedia.info. I will see you next time. Oh,